Dan Zangrilli brought to you by LGKG Injury Lawyers. Both Larry Kelly and Joe George are AV rated, as is the entire LGKG firm. LGKG, your home team. Also brought to you, Dan, is by Allegiant Federal Credit Union. Dan, how are you today? There you are. You're on 93.7 The Fan. You're live on video. What's up?
Not much. Actually, with our boy Ben Tenuta doing a project on Aliquippa football, a little bit of a secret there. So we're in downtown Aliquippa. In about an hour, I'll be in Don Yanez's basement,
wow,
wine cellar. Yeah, so we've got something up our sleeve for our high school sports platform. So really looking forward to talking to a lot of folks that have been surrounded with the history of Aliquippa football. Had a great morning. Some really interesting, riveting stuff with everything surrounding the program there. So stay tuned, Joe.
That sounds really cool, and I will stay tuned, and we can talk about that later. In addition to talking about the Pirates. All right. There's a billion places I could start. Let's start with O'Neal Cruz. This is happening every game. A ball pops out of his glove like it's Charlie Brown in the outfield. And as Greg Brown himself pointed out last night with the double play ball that should have been, he should have caught it from Ortiz. Why do so many balls pop out of his glove? The bigger question is O'Neal Cruz viable as a shortstop moving forward here?
Yeah, I mean, I've been pretty adamant in saying yes, but, you know, when you see things like you saw last night, I mean, I may have to move off my firm stance on that. Why is he dropping baseballs? I with every one of these, you just look at where his eyes are. I think it's the equivalent of a receiver turning upfield before he has possession of a football. O'Neal Cruz, and I think a lot of these drop baseballs are on, like, you know, potential double plays. It's, you know, when there's something of urgency, you just look at the eyes. He's assuming the catch, number one, and thinking about his next move before he has step A completed, before he goes to step B. So is he viable? Less and less by the day. That's what I think, the longer this continues.
Where would you play him? What's a realistic spot on the diamond that he could thrive at, or at least survive at?
You know, he obviously covers a lot of ground. I would say somewhere like right field. I don't know if he can handle left field at PNC Park. He's not an outfielder by trade, so you're going to have to go through growing pains at a new position there. The arm, obviously, is a huge tool. So I would immediately think of right field. You know, Jordy Mercer, I think, maybe it was on the morning show, floated on the air the possibility of flip-flopping Key Brian Hayes and O'Neal Cruz, perhaps, or at least playing Hayes at shortstop. Would Cruz go to third base? Maybe that's a possibility there, but I'm not sure what you know, moving the deck chairs around so much is probably not exactly where you want to go with it. But golly, man, it is a tough situation that he's putting this team in. So,
Dan, who deserves more blame? Ben Cherington, Derek Shelton, or the players?
On what? Be a little more specific there.
The season falling apart.
The season falling apart in the last 2 weeks.
I mean, ultimately the players, the bullpen in particular, right? Because there have been leads that have been blown. Sure, there have been some missteps made managerially, but to sit here and select one when it's obviously been a collective failure, that's hard to do, and you have to apply some nuance to something like this, because when something of this magnitude goes wrong, there's a lot of things that go wrong and a lot of ways that you could lay blame. The one run losses and the number of them that the Pirates have this year, that does lean towards manager. But then again, there's a lot of pitches in poor locations that have led to, you know, home runs in key situations. So who's that on? And I'm not sure the manager could have gone elsewhere in more of these situations. I mean, there have been a few situations, obviously, that I've been very vocal on that they could have gone in different directions. But, I mean, he's not out there pitching. So it's a collective failure. And when you lose as many one-run games as the Pirates have, yeah, it's that's tough, and the manager does not escape blame, but neither do the players.
Dan Zangrilli on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. I don't know what to say about Key Brian Hayes anymore. I mean, this is just mind-boggling, and it seems everybody's best answer is, well, what are you going to do about it? You know, you can't trade him. I disagree. I think you actually could trade him. I can't watch this anymore. He gets one extra base hit per month. That's not an exaggeration. What would you do with Key Brian Hayes in the offseason?
I mean, I'm trying to overhaul something. The swing, it sounds like, based on what Derek Shelton has said, is not in a good spot. It sounds like there's not a the connectivity between Hayes and maybe what the Pirates think should happen. He does employ his own personal hitting coach. We know that. John Nunnally, that's been well documented and described here over the last year or so. So it sounds like that there's a disconnect as far as where they want him to go, what he's doing, and obviously the results that he's getting. The Pirates would like to see him hit the ball in the air more. And I think that that's a fair request. From what I understand, the John Nunnally approach is very much old school, short to it, you know, long through it. Try to stay up the middle, but what is that yielding in the way of gap-to-gap power, extra base hits, doubles, hardly anything? So,
well, let me ask you this. Has Andy Haynes gotten any young hitter better here? What is if Andy Haynes is putting out a resume right now, what or who is he pointing to from his Pirate career as Exhibit A if I can get this job done?
Probably Brian Reynolds. Not that he made Brian Reynolds, but he's maintained Reynolds. He's got Reynolds, I think, in a consistent spot. And from what I understand, Reynolds is not necessarily his guy, but I think that there is something there that, and I could be wrong about this, but what I've gathered is that, you know, they work together in the offseason to some degree. I think Haynes is based in Tennessee, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me on that, but you, just to answer the question, I would say Reynolds, but I think that there's unfortunately too many examples otherwise of guys not achieving potential, namely Sawinski, namely Davis, namely Hayes, just to name three that unfortunately is, you know, you put the chips in one side of the scale, he's got far too many weighing against him.
Dan, how about I raise you Brian De La Cruz? In 10 games, he doesn't have an extra base hit, a 167 average. He is statistically one of the worst players who was acquired as a hitter at the trade deadline. Do you think that that is maybe the messaging that is being delivered to him from the Pirates hitting instructors, or do you think he's thinking too much? What do you see when you watch Brian De La Cruz?
Probably the latter, because I don't think that there's been enough time to, like, overhaul somebody or impose a philosophy that is having this adverse effect on him in such a short period of time. I think the Pirates have acquired him, kind of rolled him out there and let him do his thing. And obviously he's not doing whatever he was doing in Miami, which was hunting RBIs in some critical situations. We knew that there was going to be swing and miss, and we knew that it was going to be somewhat like, you know, an Edward Olivares from the standpoint of, you know, he was going to not necessarily, you know, put the ball in play a ton, but have the ability to drive the ball in gap-to-gap power. But he's not been good, period, end of sentence. And the Pirates haven't gotten anything of what they expected in this trade, which, again, is still very, very early, but he's not helped matters. I concur.
He's a disaster. The ball he swung at last night was 8 feet outside the strike zone. He could have used, a telephone pole, and he wouldn't have hit the damn thing.
Right. You did know that you were going to get some swing and miss in there. So that was that. But somebody that...
Are we ever going to get some swing and hit? That's my question.
Well, with swing and miss guys, there's more swing than miss. But what you need is some situational hunting RBIs, just being that big run producer. He had, 51 RBIs at the time of the deadline? And to be able to come up big and clutch at times, it's not occurred.
Dan, you're a wonderful man and really good on the Pirates, as everybody knows. Pre and post game, you can hear Dan Zangrilli And good luck with that project out in Aliquippa, and we'll talk soon.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Take care, man. That's Dan Zangrilli, Fan Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Fan Text Line, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. All right, let's get to the big boy, Mark Cabali. We're fitting three guests in this hour. It's going to be great. Wes Durham from ESPN ACC Network. I believe he was over at Pitt practice today, football. I'm going to ask him a bunch of things. This is going to be really good today, about both his observation about Pitt, and also he's done Atlanta Falcons work. His dad did North Carolina work. Maybe we can ask Wes the five greatest basketball shots in history. Shall we do that? City Limits?
Yeah, he's a big basketball guy as well.
Yes.
It'd be appropriate.
I think that would be very appropriate. We want you back after the break to talk more Pittsburgh sports. Heart disease kills one person every 33 seconds. Schedule a heart checkup at UPMC today. It's real easy to do, and I think it'll bring you some peace of mind. You know, either maybe something's up and you can fix it, or you're fine. Either way, I did this a couple of years ago. The people over there are so good at what they do. Do it. Schedule a heart checkup at UPMC today. So Mark Cabali next on the Steelers. What's up with Brandon Ayuk? And then Wes Durham from ACC Network and ESPN. Joe Patochnik, however, arrives before any of them, and his mustache always arrives first. Yes, I've been on the golf course with this guy. We were on a course one time when it was a little bit dewy in the morning. We went down a hill, and I was ejected from the golf cart like some sort of stick figure, like I was a little Lego figure. And I wound up on the grass, and when I looked up, there was Joe and his mustache just calmly backing the golf cart to a stop. I freaked out. He didn't. He handles these situations very well. He also wins a ton of awards, I might add. Without further ado, let's get to freshly fired Steelers writer Mark Cabali. Mark, how are you today? Are you doing better?
Great introduction, Joe. Very nice.
You seemed happy about this yesterday. That's why I feel comfortable joking about it.
Joe, you know what, Joe? First of all, I'd like to say I have a bone to pick with you. I was listening to your Nickelodeon segment there.
Yeah.
And two things come to mind.
Yes.
First of all, you can't do that on television is number one. Forget about it. Number one. And number two is, how in the world of a man of your age know all of these silly Nickelodeon shows?
I was wondering that too.
I was like, what is in the world's going on here?
That obviously the same way that you do, because your kids watch them all the time.
You're pulling out things I've never heard of before. It's a new era now, Joe. It's just YouTube and, you know, Lanky Box and Mr. Beast and stuff like that. It's not Nickelodeon. Now, I'm over that stuff, but you were naming iCarly and some
iCarly is a great show.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, if your kids are sitting there watching them, then so are you. Don't you watch
Drake
cartoons?
And Josh,
great show.
I have no idea.
Those are so much better.
You remind me of Drake, or is it Josh? Who's the one with black hair?
Josh.
Yeah, you remind me of Josh. Actually,
was he the portly fellow who lost a lot of
weight?
Well,
yeah,
yes,
he was. That wasn't the reason. It's because of your bright personality. Any leads on a new job yet?
I'm not at liberty to say. Maybe there's something that
I'm telling
you released sooner.
This is the best thing that has happened to you. It may not seem but it is.
You know what? You know what, Joe? Just like the IU contract, there's nothing official yet, but it's heading in that direction. So we'll see.
I know it is. And I know that you're going to land on your feet with something better. What about the Ayuk situation? Yesterday, I asked you to bet everything you own. He's going to be here or no? You said he'll, you know, phrase that way, he'll be here. You feel more or less optimistic today?
I feel about the same. To be honest with you, there's just so much gamesmanship out there that you don't even know what to believe. if you're a reporter nowadays, you'd be crazy to even put your name on anything unless the head coach or the GM calls you and says it's done, or the NFL puts out a memo or something like that. That's how fluid the situation is. It looks like Brandon Ayuk and the 49ers are, you know, just playing a game of, you know, let's see who can we get the other team more interested. I mean, this latest report of, okay, better offer to the 49ers, more money he might sign there, sounds like a shot across the bow to Omar Khan that says, hey, up your ante or he might sign here. Who knows if any of this is true? It's just been a game being played by both sides while the Steelers just sit back and say, this is our offer. Call us when you're ready to take it. And at this point, although I thought maybe yesterday was going to be that day that they were just going to wash their hands in it, the 49ers, no, we'll sit here and wait.
Mark, we appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, we'll see you.
I'm only kidding, for God's sakes. It was one.
It was... Hey, guess who called me this week?
Who?
Ronald Cook.
I was just going to ask about him.
He asked me, put it this way. This is how much he listens to your show.
He goes,
do they ever even mention me on that show anymore?
Oh, just once in a while. Just once in a while.
Just once in a while. He says he might come up at the end of the month, but he says he might not be able to afford it. So,
oh, please.
He might have to stay with you, Joe.
He's not enough free and free light.
Yeah, he's been saying that for decades. Listen, while we have you, you're the perfect guy for this. We're just going over our little drops, which you just heard two of them. Ron's laugh, and it's good for talk radio, my man. We're trying to decide when and where to play these and how good they are. Would you care to rank some of these? 1 to 3.
All right, where are we going? How many? And from 5 to 1, 1 to 5, where are we going?
Well, 1 to 5 is fine. 1, it sucks. 3, it's okay. 5, it's really good. You should use it a lot. You ready?
Okay.
Here we go.
That's a good 5 right there.
Yeah, I think that's a 5.
Anything Zeiss related is a 5.
You can see Mark, by the way, on our website feed here, 937thefan.com, in all his glory. All right, yeah, I agree. That's a 5. Next.
I don't know if I can consider that a drop more than like a half of a segment, but I'm gonna have to put that at a 6.
I was gonna say
the last one.
Yeah, Mom the Meatloaf twice there is maybe just if you ever had to shorten that the back to back Meatloaf.
Mom, just Mom the Meatloaf.
Yeah.
Well, the whole thing is the whole thing.
It's
is
so
great.
Good. Yeah. Okay. Next.
Got you, Joey.
Tony. That was Jackass Tony saying, I got you, Joey.
And that was, nobody knows who Tony is, so I put that at a 1.
Wow, that's insulting to Jackass Tony more than anybody. Okay, next.
I have no idea what that even means.
That's Joe Block after Will Craig.
I went to Cal U, so.
He tried to execute a rundown between home and first, if you'll recall. Doesn't seem like you like that one.
Nah, I'm putting that down at the 1.
All
Anything
right.
Zeiss is a 5.
Next. That was Derek Shelton during another one of our tense and uncomfortable Derek Shelton shows.
I like that one. I like that. I'll probably put that as a 3.
Okay.
A good solid 3.
Oh, I love that one.
Overused.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. Overused.
What are you giving it?
Not original.
Maybe a 2?
1, 2. Yeah, 1.5.
That hurts. Next. That one's become a favorite of mine. You?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, once again, anything Zeiss is going to be minimum 5. So, you know, I'll put this one at the 5.5. I still like the Meatloaf at 6. And the one before that at 5. So that's a 5.5. Good solid 5.5.
Dan Zangrilli saying he loves you.
That's a little freaky, so I wouldn't use that. unless you want to, unless in the middle of one of your Shelty rants, when Shelty's on the phone and he's ignoring you, maybe you could just pop that in there.
That might be good. Next. We already got that. That's a great one. That's you.
That's me. I give out. I'm not going to pat myself on the back a little bit there. So we'll go three.
How about the day? How about the day that sports marketing professor Ronald Dick called the show?
Still one of my favorites.
He couldn't say Ron fast enough.
Use that at. Where would you use that in?
We use it in the most random times possible.
Yeah, you don't need like a segue into these. Just the fact that they exist is funny. And lastly, let's leave Dr. Cabali. We'll do all the Steelers crap later. We talk about it every day. I just talked to you yesterday. We don't need to get into all that. Did he ever hear Pony call Bob's show as George from Washington? Have you heard this one yet? Mark?
Let's see.
This was Pony, and this was in the wake of me calling Bob as Fanny from Butler and, Alvin from Aliquippa and all that.
When's Pump going to finally realize that you guys are doing this to him?
Well, he realized this, but he realized it too late, and Pony was spectacular in this. And the fact that the call got through is a miracle. Here it was.
Hey, let's get right to it. George in Washington. First up tonight. Hey, George.
Bob, in 1923, Charlie Grimm had a 30-game hitting streak for the Pirates. Do you think that Brian Reynolds is going to break that record?
Well, the way he's swinging the bat now, yes, I expect that to continue, although it gets harder as the days go on.
Bob, I remember Charlie Grimm. He played with Pi Trainer. Hold on, let me put my wooden teeth in so you can understand me better. Bob, what are you doing taking George in Washington? It's Pony.
I know.
How are you falling for this again?
That's a 10 out of 5, I mean, isn't it?
It's pretty good. The only problem with that is the more you listen to it, you can pick up Pony's voice, but if you weren't aware of it, you're not going to know it's him. The best part was, I mean, put my teeth in, and Bob's like, okay. Okay, let me put my teeth in. Although, the thing is that's not out of the realm of possibility, because I've heard people call your station
that sounded
like that.
Hold on, let me put my wooden teeth in so you can understand me better.
God. You know what? I've taken to listening that City Limits sent me the little clip, so I have it on my phone. When I'm feeling down and bad, I just listen to that, and I can't help but just burst out laughing every time. How does that get...
Make that your ringtone.
I should do that. All right, big boy. Let us know on your career update and text us if anything happens with Ayuk, okay?
All right. Yeet, baby, yeet.
See you, buddy.
Yeet.
That's Mark Cabali. Did we call West Durham? Is he on the line?
No, I thought you wanted to go to a break. We'll call him right now.
Yeah, let's call him and do this back to back. I think that's the best way to do that. West Durham and others in town here for a little bit of pit coverage. ACC Network, ESPN. This is ACC Network's annual football road trip. Stopping through Pitt with West Durham, E.J. Manuel, Roddy Jones. They've been in town. I think they were watching Pitt practice today. West Durham has called a lot of games over the years, and I have plenty of questions lined up for him. His dad was an announcer for North Carolina, I believe, football and basketball, voice of the Tar Heels. Woody Durham. So we have West Durham on the line. He's on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider. Wes, we appreciate you taking the time. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Joe. Nice to be with you. Hope you're well. It's fun to be in Pittsburgh. Nice cool day you ordered up for us here.
Oh, man. The weather has taken a turn for the better this week where the heat's gone. And it's starting to feel like football weather. Tell us a little bit about the road trip you guys are on and about what you gleaned from your trip to Pitt.
Well, it's a collaborative effort. Don't get me wrong. I'm not doing all 17 schools. But, yeah, this is my second one. And Roddy Jones and EJ Manuel with me on this particular trip, and it's been good. I enjoyed watching the practice session yesterday. I'd seen some Cade Bell offenses and obviously knew a lot about him and had kind of followed his career, you know, from afar. But to watch them go through that practice session yesterday and to kind of see how they think offensively and how they, you know, kind of coach it up. And then the other piece of that, you know, anytime, Joe, something like this happens where it's a full-blown reconstruction on one side of the ball, there is, you know, there is a little give and take on the defensive side too, right? So to see Randy Bates and the defensive side kind of, you know, keep their wits about them and also how they're going to look, it's been a revealing couple days. And I think Pitt is a team that there's a short list of schools in the ACC that I think if you look at the schedule, it's a workable schedule, but I think a good start is imperative. Last year they didn't get one, and it proved to foretell a little bit of a tough season. And I think this year those first four games before the bye week can, you know, could potentially lift them to, you know, kind of a front division finish in the 17-team ACC.
Is there a clear-cut favorite in the ACC, Wes?
Look, Florida State's easy to pick because they were undefeated last year, right? But I still believe that Florida State and Clemson are the biggest brands. But I do believe, Joe, there are three, maybe even four teams behind those two that could factor into this. I mean, I'm not going to dismiss what Louisville did last year with Jeff Brom, right? I'm just not. I think he's that good a coach. I think he has obviously, you know, been able to find success in the portal, 30-plus guys to his roster each of the last 2 years in the portal, including quarterbacks, Jack Plummer last year. And Tyler Shuck's got to stay healthy, the kid from Texas Tech. He's got to stay healthy if Louisville is going to be as successful as they were a year ago. And I probably think, Joe, in all honesty, they're probably better on defense. The team for me is going to be NC State. Mm. Dave Doran has been there long enough. He's, you know, found a quarterback in McCall who's had some success. The running back in Waters. They did lose some familiar names on defense, a lot like Pitt. But they have guys, again, like the Panthers, who have played some football there. So it's not like this complete turnover, right? I think the Wolfpack have Concepcion, who's a playmaker from the slot. They've got some wide receiver talent. They've got some pretty good players at tight end. So I think NC State's in the mix. This also seems to be the month every year where we have this on-again, off-again romance with Miami. Mm. I'm one of those. I've probably been the jilted lover too many times, so I'm not buying just yet. If they hang a number in week one, Joe, I'll just go ahead and play your form. If they hang a number on Florida and Gainesville in week one, I'll be all in because I think that's what it's going to take. If Miami is tired of hearing about not taking a knee against Georgia Tech and losing the game, the easiest way they can eliminate that for the rest of the year so we don't see the fumble, right, is to go put 40 on Florida and win going away in Gainesville.
Yes. Yes. And when can we catch – is this going to be one show or a series of shows that you guys are going to do on the ACC Network, the road trip show?
No, the road trip – yeah, the road trip started, July 28th, I think, was the first one at Florida State. And we've been doing them every weeknight. And tonight is Pitt. Last night was – uh-oh, I'm going to draw a blank here. Last night was Virginia Tech. Tonight is Pitt. Tomorrow night is Virginia. And then Friday night will be Boston College. And that will, I think, just about wrap it up. Maybe one on Monday.
Awesome.
But, yeah, no, it's been really good. And the schools are great. And, of course, you know, people here at Pittsburgh are always incredible with their hospitality and things like that. So it makes it a lot of fun.
Well, we'll be watching tonight. But now that we have you on the line, Wes, you've had a fascinating career here. So I have some questions for you, if you don't mind.
Okay. Sure.
One, you're the radio play-by-play announcer for the Falcons, and we have right. Arthur Smith now in town. I don't know if you saw Arthur over at the facility today, but how would you summarize his time in Atlanta, and what do the Steelers have here in your opinion?
Well, I think he came from Nashville to Atlanta as being the offensive coordinator of the Titans, right? And he'd certainly grown his career to a point where I thought he was most deserving of a head coaching opportunity. The thing in Atlanta that probably stunted what would have been a successful tenure there was the quarterback situation. Matt Ryan was there in year one. Atlanta won 7 games, but they were completely beat up on the defensive side of the ball. And I think that when and then in the offseason, they made the move. They, you know, chased Deshaun Watson, who ended up in Cleveland, and Atlanta ended up with Marcus Mariota and then drafted Desmond Ridder, right? And at the same time, Atlanta invested in offensive draft picks. It was Kyle Pitts, and then it was Drake London. It was Bijan Robinson last year. I look at where Atlanta was, and they went through a defensive coordinator change last year, too, where Ryan Nielsen came in. To me, Arthur, in many ways, the inconsistent play at quarterback, and Joe, in all honesty, for 14 years, Matt Ryan was a quarterback, and 11 of those 14, his aggregate play was probably top 10 in the league, right? And when Matt Ryan left, Atlanta went to bottom 5 quarterback play. And you know, in a city like this, and the way it's been both for Roethlisberger here, quarterbacks become a premium in this league. Like, I don't think you and I have ever seen, to be honest, right?
Yeah.
And you got to get that position right. And Atlanta, unfortunately, didn't get it right. And at the end of the day, it probably cost Arthur, because while Atlanta was very good running the football, and that's probably why I thought he was a good fit here, is that Atlanta wasn't able to score enough points. And so red zone inadequacies last year were the biggest problem Atlanta had. Turnovers in the red zone were the biggest problem. And, you know, Ridder and Mariota just weren't very good, and Ridder wasn't very good last year, and Heinicke came in, and he wasn't much better. So the quarterback position in many ways salted that away. From afar now, to be honest with you, as much as respect as I have for Coach Tomlin, I'm interested to see how this plays out in Pittsburgh. Being here to do a lot of Pitt games for television, my friendship with Bill Hillgrove over the years, have great respect for the Rooneys and the organization, but you know, Mike Tomlin's done such a marvelous job here, but how's this going to shake on the offensive side? I'm as fascinated as anyone. I like Arthur as a person, his family, wonderful people. He is a really, really smart football guy. And I'm going to be interested to see. I've got a lot of friends who are Steelers fans in the South, so I'm going to be as interested as anybody to see how it plays out week one in Atlanta, not just in him coming back, but what does Pittsburgh look like and how does Atlanta react defensively when, you know, some of those formations and packages might look very similar to what they saw for the last 3 years.
Yeah, it's going to be, in a lot of ways, college and pro here, the tale of two new offensive coordinators.
Yeah.
Wes Durham is on the line from ESPN, from ACC Network. And I don't know if Colin told you, but I had one more question. Your dad, legendary voice of the North Carolina Tar Heels. So you've been around sports, been around basketball, legendary moments, I would imagine, for your whole life. I have the top 5 basketball shots of all time here, Wes. Everybody's been talking about this since the Steph Curry shot the other day. Top 5: Lorenzo Charles,
ooh,
Christian Laettner, Magic's baby hook in Boston to beat the Celtics. Jordan beats the Cavs, not the one against the Jazz, the one up against the Cavs.
The one over Elo at Richmond?
Yes, I was in the building. And Steph's gold medal game. What are your top 5?
Well, because of the way I grew up, I have to say Jordan from out on the left against Georgetown in 82.
Yes.
I agree with you on Lorenzo Charles and Christian Laettner. I think that Lorenzo Charles... Derek Wittenberg swears it was a pass. That's a joke. and I love Witt. Laettner's shot essentially won the national championship for Duke. Just think about how light that the pivot of college basketball changed on the one shot, right?
Yes.
And now, 30-odd years later, we still look at that shot in a way that we don't look at any others, both Lorenzo Charles and Christian Laettner, for that matter. I was doing the Turner team cast for Chris Jenkins of Villanova.
We mentioned that one, too.
When they beat Carolina in Houston. And that was just – Marcus Page's double-clutch three from in front of the Tar Heel bench got lost in the wash when Jenkins then hit the next shot.
Yes.
I would then throw – and I'm going to go back to Jordan – I would do the Jordan flu game jump shot.
Absolutely.
To win the game. Was that game six? That was game six, I think, right?
Yeah, that was game six. Yeah, a lot of people put that one on there.
Yeah, the one from Cleveland, though, is awesome. I mean, and Jim Durham's call is just insanely good. Mm. And so is Dick Stockton's on CBS that day, I think, too. So, but, I would probably go that route. Is that five? That's five.
Yeah,
and I got
five.
Jordan in there twice. That's good. The ACC people will be happy. I got Leitner, Charles, and Jordan in twice, so I'm good. Yeah.
I love that. Did your dad have a moment like, my name's Joe Starkey. There's a Joe Starkey out in California.
I know the other Joe Starkey very well.
Yes, yeah. And of course, his signature moment is the band is on the field. Did your dad have a moment like that or a game or a call like that in North Carolina history? Was it the Jordan shot?
Yeah, the Jordan shot is close. He passed away 6 years ago, Joe, and he never claimed favorites. Out of reverence for the players and the coaches that he worked with at Chapel Hill for 40 years doing the games. But the Jordan jump shot, especially because they had lost the year before to Indiana and the Spectrum in Philadelphia in the finals.
Yeah.
I think the Jordan jump shot felt like a seminal moment, if you will, for Carolina basketball and Coach Smith to win the national title. Remember now in 93, the Chris Webber timeout call.
Oh my God.
They won 11 years later in the same building.
Wow.
And that game, I know that particular call he was proud of. And then he had a football call in 2004. Carolina knocked Miami out of the top five and probably the national championship race when they kicked the last-second field goal to beat the Canes in Chapel Hill. And he nailed the call. I mean, it's my dad and everything, but I would tell you if I was just from a professional standpoint, he nailed the call. So
that's
I knew
awesome.
He loved that from a football perspective. And you know, we're fortunate in this business, Joe. You like me, you spend a lot of time, you watch games, you listen to games. I mean, there's just some incredible artwork being done on radio and television these days. I thought No Eagle was tremendous in Paris, by the way. And I think that, like Don Fisher, the voice of the Indiana Hoosiers, and Bill Hillgrove here in Pittsburgh, and guys like that, who just set such a standard in our industry and the art form of doing games have really made it kind of special to be in this industry now at this time and place for sure.
Well, we really appreciate you taking the time, Wes, and we'll be watching tonight your trip through Pittsburgh on ACC Network's ACC Football Road Trip Show. We really appreciate that. That was great.
Anytime, Joe. I'm happy to do it. Look forward to being back. And I'm sorry Zeiss couldn't be there today, but I'm sure he has a tee time somewhere that's a pressing issue for him. So
that's exactly what he has. He's at the Raceway, Indianapolis Raceway golf course thing. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, the Brickyard.
Yes.
Golf club at Brickyard. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I knew if Zeiss wasn't on the show, he had to be playing golf because it's August. And he did our old Packer and Durham show more. He did, just so you know, he appeared more from parking lots of golf clubs on FaceTime doing our show than anybody else. So there you go.
You know him well. Thanks again, Wes.
Be well, Joe. Thank you.
That was fun, wasn't it, Limits?
Yeah, he's great. Like I like watching him on the ACC Network and those post-game shows that they do all the time. And his calls at the Falcons games, I mean, just hearing it in his voice, I could literally hear Falcons highlight calls.
You must be fascinated with people like that because that's ultimately what you want to do, right? Or is one career option?
Yeah, I want to do this and try to also do play-by-play.
Yeah.
That's, you know, be multifaceted and multidimensional. So being able to listen to some of the things that he's saying and the way that he goes about his business. And obviously, everybody applauds Bill Hillgrove for the way that he goes about it with Pitt.
Oh, yes.
There are definitely some good mentors to be able to look up to and guys that you can take some notes from.
What's the greatest sports call of all time? Do you believe in miracles?
That's the first one that popped into my mind.
Is that the one?
That's the one that popped into my mind, yep. Al Michaels.
What about the band is on the field?
The band is on the field is a good one. I think of, it wasn't a famous call, but I think of Lanny calling Bobby Knight throwing the chair on the floor, where he literally just said, and Bobby Knight has thrown a chair. And that's basically it, but the picture is what really tells the story.
Havlicek stole the ball. Chick Hearn, you got that one?
What about Benino?
No. That one was great, but we're talking nationally legendary. Legendary stuff. Send it in, Jerome?
Send it in, Jerome. It's one of the best ones.
Would you agree with
that? Probably, is that the best Pittsburgh call? Like, happened in the city.
Might be. The Mazeroski call. right?
That's one that popped out of my mind
but
as well.
But I can't think of the exact phrasing of that call. That's the thing. That's the only thing.
Yeah, other than it was just a deep fly ball to left field and Mazeroski wins it for the Pirates in the World Series. That was really it.
It's got to be, do you believe in miracles?
Yes.
I'm looking up some of the other ones here. You can feel free to drop the pawpaws.
Is that your second pawpaws?
I looked and some of these I can't. The moment, it's one thing to say the moment, but it has to be the call. It has to be the call.
I always like Joe Buck's when David Freese hit the walk-off home run in Game 6 of the World Series. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Down goes Frazier.
Down goes Frazier. There you go. That one. And Havlicek stole the ball. And do you believe in miracles? Those are the ones. That's it.
And the band is on the field.
Yeah.
Send it in, Jerome, Bill Raftery.
Right.
Go crazy, folks. Go crazy. The Ozzie Smith call from Jack Buck.
Oh, yes.
Oh, how about the... I'm doing the same thing as you. I looked it up. What about the call from Vin Scully when the ball got behind the bag through Buckner? Here comes Knight and the Mets win it.
Yeah. I was at Tim Hurley's house drunk for that. All right, Limits. Let's get back to a little Pirate talk at the top here. That really...
I didn't realize that when Joe Buck made that call, the home run in St. Louis,
yeah,
he was channeling and not copying, but I guess tributing his dad from the call that Jack Buck made in the World Series in Game 6 in 91 when Kirby Puckett hit the walk-off home run.
What about the Kirk Gibson call? Was that Vin Scully on that one, too?
That was Vin Scully.
What did he say? I can't remember. That's the problem.
I don't believe what I just saw.
There you go.
Or that was Jack Buck.
Wait, what was he talking
Scully
about?
Scully also called it.
I don't believe what I just saw. That was the Gibson home run?
Yeah, that was from Jack Buck.
That was
Buck.
Legendary. Very legendary.
One of the ones that is in here is the Sean McDonough call of 92. Touch them all, Joe. Joe Carter, 93 World Series.
No, that doesn't count. All right. People got hot earlier today with the Pirates. I want to ask you a series of questions about this team at 1 o'clock out there. From O'Neill Cruz's position to what are you going to do with Key Brian Hayes to listening back to Shelty, who claims this is more bad luck than bad baseball. If they wind up in last place, like I argued with Bob and Paul the other day, I said that Shelty and Charrington should go into next year on the hot seat if this continues with the Pirates. But man, if they wind up in last place, 10 games under or 15 games under, I almost don't see how you couldn't make a move. Let's talk about that. 412-928-9370. 50-minute mark on the Fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. We're obviously keeping tabs on the Aiyuk situation. It's just my feeling is it's less optimistic. But that's sort of a gut feel. That's no hard and fast information. That's just reading what's out there. And the longer this goes on, and they seem to be so close, like it's not that far apart. And fan weather